EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you've all had a good week. We are joined by Jeff, who grew up in Connecticut, and Jeff will be sharing his UFO and paranormal experiences involving what can be best described as child spirits. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal, and if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate you having me.
It's great to have you join us this evening, and you're calling from Georgia.
That's right. Yeah, I'm living in North Georgia now, and I grew up in Connecticut, northern New Haven County area. That's where most of the these experiences took place.
Okay, great stuff. And you're going to be sharing some UFO experiences and some paranormal encounters as well. Would you like to start from the beginning, please, Jeff?
Sure. So I was probably, I would say, like 8 or 9 years old. So 83, 84, somewhere in that general area. I used to spend a lot of time outside and, you know, running around, unlike, you know, a lot of kids today. But anyway, in the summertime, you know, my mother would just say, you know, make sure you come home when it gets dark. And one night I was coming home and walking home. As I approached my home, I thought I saw a very large, bright, white light above a tree. And at that age, I had no prior experiences or knowledge of UFOs, so I didn't know what it was. It's one of the few memories I have from, you know, that early of an age, if you know, of something very bizarre happening. Anyway, I saw this, and I remember running inside my house. And then for several weeks after that, now, that's where the experience ended, but for several weeks after that, I had these very lucid dreams of, which, you know, some people have reported having of, you know, when you're a child, of where you're literally flying over your neighborhood, if you will. And so I don't necessarily know if this was an experience or some strange dream, but that was my first strange experience like that. I really just to this day don't really know what to make of it. I know that I got home fine. I didn't get in any trouble, but I certainly had saw something, and I had some very odd dreams going forward for months after that. And then, you know, I would say fast forward, I never really saw anything bizarre up until after that, until I was I would say 2003. It would be the next time, and that was a good friend of mine that I had grown up with, his father had a Christmas tree farm to the east. There was a school there. They used to have fireworks that they would do on July 4th from the school. So we were pretty close to that. And so every 4th of July, we would go to his house and watch him and just to have a good time. So that's what we were doing. And then after the show, I was, you know, talking to him, and I was facing the opposite direction. So somewhat, I would say, like northwest. And we were just talking and stargazing. All of a sudden, we both kind of noticed at the same time there was these what looked like distant stars in terms of size or you know, context of what you would see in the night sky. And there was maybe 5 to 6 of them. And they were grouped together and they started moving independently. Definitely not within the atmosphere. They would seem to be outside of it, at least as far as we could tell. They were just, you know, moving in different directions, almost as if kind of observing the fireworks, if you will, that go on in the U.S. for July 4th. And then as we were, you know, gobsmacked looking at this, For a few minutes, we tried to get the attention of others. They tried to say, oh, no, that's nothing. That must be a satellite. But they were going from right to left, up, down, almost dancing. And it went on for 3 to 4 minutes until finally they literally zoomed off to the west and were gone. To this day, Ben and I, you know, we speak a couple of times a year and we still talk about it because it was just an unbelievable experience. And then, you know, my next experience, again, northern New Haven County, Connecticut. This was a daylight sighting. I was at my friend's the pool at his condo. Where this pool was located, it was located at the top of a hill. So it had a really, really good view around because Connecticut, especially northwest or western Connecticut, can be quite hilly. It's kind of close to the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. But anyhow, really good view. It wasn't a cloud in the sky. This was the middle of summer that year, 2 and 3 in the afternoon. It was me, my friend, and then there were some other people, like a mother and her children actually were swimming in the pool. And all of a sudden, out of the northwest, we saw a silver cigar-shaped object. I would equate it to something larger than, say, a 747. It started heading towards us from the northwest towards the southeast. You know, I figure if planes typically fly at an altitude of, say, between 35 and 45,000 feet, this was a little bit lower than that, I'd say, somewhere in the neighborhood of, say, 25,000 feet. And as we started watching it get closer, we realized that it had no wings, no contrails, or no noise. No windows, no anything, just the sun was shining off of this object, metallic silver object. It was going very slow too, and certainly not a blimp or anything like that. It was going a little bit slower than, say, a plane would, if I had to guess. Anyhow, we were in shock. I wanted to get somebody else, you know, to put eyes on this. So I called over to the lady and I asked her, look, and she just looked up and said, oh, it's just a plane. And I said, really? Take a closer look. And she looked, didn't say anything for a good 10 seconds. And then she finally said, I don't know what that is. The whole experience took, I would say, maybe 30 seconds or so, maybe 40. And then it disappeared over the tree line and she grabbed her children and left shortly thereafter. It was just a very interesting thing to see. It was in the middle of the day. I lived in that area for a long time, and there was a certain flight path that planes would take from Bradley International Airport heading south, for instance. And this was not on that flight path. And it certainly was no plane. I just can't explain it. And I moved to Georgia about 6 years ago or so. Never seen anything. I'm always looking up in the sky, especially after these experiences that I've had. I was talking to an old friend I hadn't spoken to in a long time, and we had a lot to catch up on. And I was just sitting out on my back porch. This was on July 15th of this year. From the east, as I was talking to him on the phone and looking up in the sky, I saw a very, very bright, perfectly round, white object that came from the east and was heading west. Again, in this instance, it's a different flight path than what I see every day coming from the airport in Atlanta. And basically, it went at a very steady pace. No noise, no nothing. It just was a bright white light. And it went all the way to the west. And I told my friend about it. He said, come on, you know, he thought I was making something up. It disappeared over the trees to the west. And I just went back to the conversation. Still keeping my eyes up in the sky. I would say maybe 3 to 4 minutes later, it reappeared and came back out from over the tree line. Started going very slowly this time and seemingly brighter coming back. It stopped in where the Big Dipper was, where one of the points, one of the stars, where the point is of the Big Dipper, on the lower side, I guess. And it just stayed there. And it stayed there for, I would say, of 30 to 45 seconds. And I was trying to take a picture of it, but there's a lot of light pollution in this area, and it just didn't come out. But it was super bright, and it was stationary at this point. Again, no noise, no flashing, nothing like that. Just a solid, bright white orb that this was within the atmosphere. It wasn't in the stratosphere or something. Anyway, I was in shock looking at this, just trying to explain this to my friend who didn't believe me. And then all of a sudden it zipped off. It did not go back the way it came. It just literally, it was there. I saw some movement and it was gone. And I blame you, Nick, for this sighting. But that is what I've got for my UFO encounters. And each one was unique. And it certainly has opened my eyes to the fact that there's something going on that we just can't explain.
Now, when you said about the sighting during the 4th of July, mm-hmm. With the fireworks, it would make complete sense. I mean, imagine how great it looks from above. All these lights going off, these flashing, you know, they're going to want to get a good point of observation and see what's going on down here.
Well, certainly. I mean, what are they here for anyhow? We can only imagine with our human minds what they're here for. But I guess you could surmise they're observing us, right? And at least in the U.S., it must be a very interesting time of the year to observe us, right? The July 4th. And also, perhaps they are observing us, hoping we're, you know, maybe possibly seeing if we're going to war with one another. And, you know, these fireworks do look like some sort of battle could be going on, a brief one. So perhaps, but who knows? Who knows what their motivations are? But it did seem to me in that instance that that's what came to mind to me was that they were, whatever they were watching what was happening.
Absolutely. It'd make a lot of sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And so I guess I can get into some of these paranormal or spiritual experiences I had growing up as well. These experiences started happening when my parents moved to northern New Haven County from they used to live in Bridgeport, actually, Connecticut. So when we moved into the new house, I was the lucky one that had a bedroom. My bedroom had there was a door heading to the attic in my bedroom. For reasons unbeknownst to me, other than the fact that my father was not a very handy man, it was missing a doorknob. It was just a hole, you know. So this was probably started in 1981 and lasted, I guess, until maybe 1987 or so. But anyhow, it was a partially finished attic. I know my father would keep, you know, records up there sometimes and so on and so forth. But ultimately, my first memory of this was I woke in the middle of the night with where the knob was. Should have been, I should say. And I heard noises, shuffling, moving about upstairs, and I knew that nobody was there. So I was able to run to my parents' room and try to rouse them, and they came in. And you know, my mother blamed my father for going up there and leaving the light on, of course, but I know that didn't happen because I'd gone to bed prior to it being really dark, and it wasn't on then. And this sort of thing would happen to me on a monthly basis for many years. One time in particular, and I know you've touched on this, it was felt like a sleep paralysis situation. I woke up, there was a lot of loud noises going on up there. The light was shining through again through the doorknob, and I tried to scream, but no words came out. I couldn't move. I was petrified. I was, you know, I was a young kid. I was 6, 7, 8 years old, if I had to guess. I could not get anybody's attention. I couldn't move. I had to basically sit through it with my eyes open. And it was very traumatic, very traumatic. These are, you know, those types of things that you remember when, you know, when you're growing up. There's a lot of things that you don't remember as a kid, but, you know, as when you turn into an adult. But these are, this is certainly one of them. And then, you know, I had some older kids in the neighborhood that swore to me that they said, hey, you know, where were you on Sunday? Or why wouldn't you open the door when we were knocking? I said, we weren't here. We were visiting my grandparents. Well, I thought I saw you upstairs in the attic doing something. You were waving us. Nope, I wasn't home. And this happened on several occasions. So I had neighborhood children telling me that they saw a child, you know, in the attic window on numerous occasions when we weren't home. There was nobody in the home. Luckily, we moved from there sometime around 1987, I believe. Shortly thereafter, I lost my grandfather. My grandfather passed away. We were pretty close. We used to go fishing all the time. He would take me on all sorts of adventures, and he was a really good guy. And he passed away, and I would say maybe a day or two after he passed, I remember I was watching TV, and I was just laying on the floor on a pillow and watching television, and I had fallen asleep. And when I woke up, I opened my eyes, and there was his telltale fishing boots that he always used to wear, and his socks, his legs. I opened my eyes. I saw him, or at least from the waist down, I saw him there. You know, I remind you, I was laying on the ground, you know, basically. And I was immediately petrified. I closed my eyes and I said, please, this can't be real. And when I opened my eyes again, he was walking around the corner. I immediately stood up, and there was nobody there. So I had just assumed, you know, looking back on it, certainly that he was saying goodbye, you know, and it was touching. You know, I was completely freaked out at that time. But looking back now, I think it was a nice thing. Anyhow, my next experience was a little bit more intense. I'd say maybe I was sophomore in high school, 1991, maybe something like that. I had a girlfriend, and she had a home that was built in the late 1700s. I know the foundation was original, perhaps some parts of the home, but I think, you know, it was mostly rebuilt, but it was a very old home. And you know, we had known each other for many years prior to us being boyfriend girlfriend. And I remember hearing rumors. Some of her girlfriends would say that there was odd things would happen in the home. One time in particular, she had a group of girls over for a sleepover, and there was something hanging from the ceiling, almost like a paper mache type thing, and it just started spinning violently. And anyhow, when I would start hanging out with her, going over there, I started noticing some very odd things happening. So where the TV room was, that was in addition to the house. And we would typically hang out there. Her parents worked a lot, so she was home babysitting her brothers and sisters, stuff like that. Sometimes we were there by ourselves. But you would ultimately hear things, chairs being dragged on the floor, cabinet doors opening, closing, slamming. I would always jump up and go investigate. And I would never find anything askew. The chairs were where they should be. The cabinets were closed. I never could catch anything. I think she had lived with this for so long that she had basically been in denial. She didn't really want to talk about any of it. I think that was perhaps her coping mechanism for living in that home. I remember one day I had slept over, and when I woke up, I was wearing glasses, so my eyesight isn't very good. But anyhow, when I woke up, I thought I was talking to her at the other end of the room, and she wasn't talking back. So I leaned over to get my glasses, and when I put them on, there was no one there. She wasn't even in the house. She had gone to pick up breakfast for us. She had left a note that I read. Some other odd things that would happen there were she had a lot of younger brothers and sisters. And oftentimes I would hear one of her young sisters in particular speaking to something that wasn't there. That was really spooky. One time I heard her, she didn't know I was listening, and I was outside the room, but she was saying something like, "No, my mother is good," and you know, something along those lines. It almost as if whomever she was talking to was saying bad things about her mother. So I remember I went into the room, I asked her who she was talking to, and she said, Rosie. And I said, you know, anybody who says bad things about your family, you shouldn't listen to them. I tried to, you know, the best I could to, rationalize it with her in terms of, you know, do not pay attention to anything like that and don't talk to them anymore if that's the case. But yeah, the kids seemed affected by it. And then I think, you know, the coup de grace for me was one night I came to her home to pick her up. Her whole family was gone. We were going to go back to my house and watch movies and stuff like that. And so she had me go throughout the house. And as a matter of fact, Nick, I believe that something similar happened to one of your previous guests. I think he was in Martha's Vineyard, if I remember correctly. But it really struck a nerve with me when I listened to his story. But anyhow, she had me go throughout the whole house and make sure all the lights were off. Everything was locked up. I turned on the porch light, locked the front door, and we left. And the plan was to bring her back home later that evening. Her best friend was going to come over and have a sleepover, and I was going to go back home to my home. So when we got back to her home, as we were pulling up, every light in the whole house was on. Every single one. And her whole family was out of the state. I believe they were in Massachusetts visiting some friends or something. The hair stood up back of my neck when we pulled into the driveway. You know, I said to her, I said, "This is not right." And she said, "Oh no, it's okay. It's okay." I said, "This is not okay." And, I don't know if you've ever stood underneath power lines. But I literally had every hair on my body, it felt like was standing on end. And I could almost hear like a faint humming, if you will. I don't know whether I was just an adrenaline dump or what, but I was, you know, completely freaked out, of course. But she was determined to go home. So I said, well, let's just open the door and let's look around a little bit, you know. So we crept up to the door. I unlocked it. And as soon as I opened the door, I heard what sounded like little children upstairs giggling. And running, like little footsteps, just running in all directions upstairs. Like I would equate it to if parents came home and the kids were supposed to be asleep and they were running to their beds, you know, something like that. But I was petrified, and I was, you know, I was 17, 18 years old, I think, at the time. And anyhow, I said, no, we're, you know, I made her go back to my car, and, you know, she was determined to have her friend over. And I, you know, again, she was in denial. I think that's the only way she could live there. But I said, all right, if we're going to wait for your friend, we're going to wait in the driveway. So we did that. Her friend came. She left, and I got the heck out of there. And I talked to the mother about this a few years after this event, and I just tried to get some answers from her. And she told me that stuff like that had been going on in that house ever since they moved there. She had an infant that was screaming in the middle of the night. She went to check on it, and she felt something jump on her back. She fell to the ground screaming. Her husband came out. I think that was the most intense experience that she had had personally in that house. But she claims that sometime in the late 1700s, early 1800s, there was a fire in the house that she had looked into the history of, and some children had died in the home. Whether this is true or not, I have no way of knowing. I can only take her word for it. But it certainly seemed to make a lot of sense in terms of children spirits, because there was a lot of mischievousness. And then, you know, I had that experience with what seemed like children running away and giggling and that sort of thing. But that was the last paranormal experience I ever had, thankfully. It's not something I look for. I don't if I never have another ghost experience like that again, I'll be okay with that.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Sounded like a creepy old house, that one.
Oh my goodness. And you know, obviously where you're from, there's much, much, much older. In New England, you can find some pretty old homes, and that was certainly, but that was a really freaky experience. I was on edge every single time I was at that home. Just really, really bizarre stuff. And I always would try to investigate. I don't know if I wanted to see anything necessarily, but I always tried to rationalize what I was experiencing, you know. But sometimes you just can't rationalize it.
That's right. Especially when children speak into something which is not there. You know, that's always kind of creeps me out.
That was really bad. Yeah, that was really bad. I was thankful that they moved out of there while the kids were still young so they could have kind of a normal childhood, I guess.
Of course, yeah. Who did the little girl say she was talking to? Rosie?
Somebody named Rosie. They looked at me like an older brother. This is a girl I dated from the time we were, I don't know, maybe like end of freshman year in high school all the way up through, I was 21 years old. So, the little ones looked at me like kind of an older brother, and parents were working so much that she and I had babysat a lot. So they kind of, you know, I guess they believe, you know, they respected me, and I tried to squash that, you know, when I experienced that, but, it was really, really scary. I mean, sure, kids have imaginary friends, you know, but this was different.
You know, I'm pretty sure there's quite a few parents out there listening tonight that have children that have imaginary friends, or at least they have friends that they speak to that the parents mm-hmm. can't see. So,
well, I would encourage parents to, you know, take their kids a little more seriously sometimes.
Yeah, listen. Yeah, have a listen to what they're telling you and what they're
That's
being
it.
Told. Because it could be nothing, but, you know, especially if something else is giving bad advice and telling the child something a little bit negative, then you kind of want to intervene and find out what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if you remember that when I mentioned that you had a guest on that had an experience in Martha's Vineyard.
The house on Martha's Vineyard. That's right.
And I remember him saying that he turned all the lights off at the home. And when he returned later, it was like the opposite of what he had done. You know, all the lights he turned off were now on. That's exactly what happened to me. It's as if everything that I did before I left, they were watching and they they turned them all on. You know, it was pretty insane. And then, of course, you know, your body reacts when you're experiencing something like that. I think that's a pretty good telltale sign that what you're experiencing is real. And, you know, I think there's a side to our being that we've forgotten, maybe a spiritual side that can recognize the spiritual side of things, if you will, you know,
because we have a saying in the UK, and it's whenever you get a feeling like that, you say, oh, someone just walked over my grave.
There you go.
Goosebumps on your arms and everything. So it kind of feels like you've just crossed paths or come into contact with something.
Oh, yes. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I equate it to standing close to really high power electrical wires or something like that, where you can almost hear the humming of the electricity.
Sure. Yeah.
And every hair on your body stands up on end. That's what it was like. I could even hear. And again, I don't know if that was an adrenaline jump or dump in my that was happening to me or not or what. But again, you know, it's something I'll never forget for the rest of my life.
It stays with you, doesn't it? I must admit, I lived in some haunted houses when I was a kid. And yeah, that kind of stuff stays with you.
And you know what's interesting to me is that when you have most of the time you don't remember your dreams. But it seems to me like either when a traumatic experience or a very, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but an astounding experience. Like, you've had these things stay with you for the rest of your life. I know that I had one dream that I had that will always stay with me. I was in my backyard as a kid, probably at the age, I was 14, 15, 16, maybe. I don't remember. There was a party going on. I was down by on the ground in the backyard looking up at the porch. And there was this guy there that I didn't recognize. Everybody else was family and friends. This guy I didn't recognize. And he was staring right at me. And all of a sudden, like, his eyes turned like almost like an eagle's eyes, like almost like that stern. And he started smiling in a very creepy way. Sudden, he jumped off the porch and he went right into my chest. And I woke up from the dream in a complete panic. Like, I was now awake. And as soon as I woke up, I heard like, bleh, like, I don't know if it was me or what, but I started punching where I thought I heard this noise. It was my pillow. Like, I was fighting for my life. And I will never forget that. That was the most frightening dream that I can ever remember having. Almost like something tried to jump into me, you know, a spirit, if you will, tried to jump me. That's kind of what I would equate it to.
Yeah, it sounds kind of symbolic in a way.
I don't know what to make of it. If you have any insight, let me know. That is very bizarre. And that occurred with me, like people moving in the attic where it shouldn't have been. It's the middle of the night. But I couldn't move. My eyes were open. I could hear them. I could hear whatever was going on. Nothing came into my room, but I couldn't move and I couldn't scream. I tried screaming. No, nothing came out. And this happened 5 to 10 times. But as soon as I moved from that house, it never happened again.
Yeah, I think a lot of places where we live, you know, I think it is very possible that they can affect your sleeping habits and behavior and stuff. So even though there is there's medical reasons why we have sleep paralysis is all based around chemicals and the way our bodies are. But I also think there is another something else there which does have a reaction, because I've had some really bizarre dreams. Some really strange stuff has gone on.
I think in this instance that I'm describing, it always occurred when something, at least that I thought was paranormal, was happening in the house. That's the only time I ever experienced any sort of sleep paralysis. So yes, I do think there is some sort of a congruence with that.
Yeah, no, I agree. The houses where I've lived in the past, where we've had the most activity, that's usually the time when I've had the craziest lucid dreams, and where my sleep behavior is, it can be a little bit odd.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of it. It's very interesting to me.
And the funny thing is, actually, because I was talking to my neighbor over the fence. Now, I've lived in this house nearly 4 years. And I talked to my neighbor all the time. He's a real nice guy. But he said to me, he goes, this is going to be an odd question. He goes, but have you ever experienced anything actually in this house? And we have over the years, right? But we've never told him about it. And there's been times when we'd hear running up and down the stairs. And I always think, we always think it's the guy next door. And I'll check, look out the front. And sure enough, his car isn't even there. So we've had that on quite a few occasions. In the current house, yeah. Even though, you know, other than that kind of weird noises, we never really experienced much. But apparently the previous neighbors, she actually approached him and showed him pictures of things that was going on actually in this house alone. And during that time, he was actually getting things happening in his house. And he's got this picture of his bed that he took. He went out to work. He made his bed. He went out to work. He came home. And then there was an imprint of someone that had led actually on his bed.
Wow. That is crazy. That reminds me of what I told you, you know, during the interview about when I opened my eyes and saw what I thought was my girlfriend basically at the end of the bed looking at me. And I was trying to ask her questions and I got no response. In fact, I told her I was hungry. I wanted to have breakfast. And when I reached over to get my glasses and put them on, there was no one there. And there was a note. I may have forgot to put that in the interview, but there was a note on the bed from my girlfriend saying that she went out to go get bagels and cream cheese for us. So no one was home. And that was very, very bizarre.
Was it just kind of like a figure, like a blur?
Again, you know, my eyes weren't very good. They still aren't. But yes, it was definitely a figure. Enough so where I saw the long hair, slender build, and I thought it was my girlfriend. The fact that I you know, had all these experiences and still stayed in that house with her as often as I did still boggles my mind. But, you know, to be young and in love, right?
The things you do.
That's right. Well, I'm sure that many of your guests have said this, but it's therapeutic. Honestly, I feel like a weight's been lifted off my shoulders a bit to talk to you about all this stuff because, you know, like I said, and you know very well, most people think this is bollocks.
As the British would say.
But you know, when you experience these things, you're no longer a believer, you're a knower. And I certainly know about these things. Now, what they are, that's a whole different ball of wax.
That's exactly it. That's exactly, and people experience these things all the time. And I know it can be difficult for people to, you know, tell family members and friends and stuff without getting ridiculed, and I know, but you know, it's the audience, the listeners of this show are very like-minded. You know, they want to hear these experiences, because more often than not they've had or know of someone which has experienced something themselves.
Well, I've listened to your show quite a bit, and some of the guests that come on there tell stories that are amazing, even sometimes fantastical stuff. I'm like, leaves me shaking my head, like, what? The things that happened to me, I feel like a lot of people have had very similar experiences, whereas some of these more fantastical things are hard to wrap your mind around. The things that happened to me, I think, have happened to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't share this in the interview because, again, it's something I heard my father told me once. But back in the 80s, my parents and I would guess maybe five other couples, they used to have like a gourmet club, and they would meet once a month, and everybody would make something. They would pick a theme, you know, and make something and have dinner together, so on and so forth. There was this one woman who pulled my father aside. I don't know why. Perhaps he had mentioned something about UFOs or something. But anyhow, and this supposedly, actually, interestingly, took place within a mile of my 4th of July experience. But there is a huge reservoir there, and there was a road that went across a bridge, across a shortened portion of this reservoir. And this woman lived off that road. One night she was on her way home, let's say around 8 o'clock at night. And she said that she looked to her right at the reservoir, as she always does every night. And there was a large white light above the reservoir, shining a beam into the water. And she said she was astonished. She came to a stop. And then 3 hours later, she was several hundred yards up the road on her way home. And her, you know, this was before cell phones. So by the time she got home, her husband was like, "Where the hell were you?" And she had no recollection of the event. I think she was either recently pregnant at the time, or got pregnant shortly thereafter, and ended up having a miscarriage not long after that. And my father told me that there was a book written, not of her, but of UFOs sightings that happened in that area in the 70s. It was involving Wallingford, Connecticut. And I can try to find the information on what the name of that book is if you want, and I can maybe email it to you. But yeah, that's I guess there must have been multiple events in that general area.
Interesting. Yeah, it does sound like she did have something happen there. For everyone that you hear, there is thousands more which have actually gone through all this but are not aware of it, you know, or just don't let it out.
Yeah. It's amazing. The Betty and Barney Hill episode, how they described gray aliens, if you will, what we call those these days, before that was even a thing.
That's right. They did.
It's hard to wrap your mind around that. You know, it's hard to brush it off. And I just don't understand what the purpose is. Is it as simple as what our scientists do to say animals in Africa? We dart them, we tag them, and we drug them and send them on their way? Or is it something more nefarious? I who knows?
I think it's, from what I led to believe, I mean, it's many different things going on. I don't think it's just one. I think it's many different fractions all doing many different things at once, so to speak. I'd imagine some would be good and I imagine some would be bad. And I also think some is completely devoid of any emotion whatsoever.
Right. And I've had conversations with, I have one friend at least that kind of, that, you know, I don't think he's had any experiences, but he definitely is a, what I would say is a believer. And I said that, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to figure out what the motivations are, or we use human thinking to try and explain some of these events, but we may not be dealing with humans. So I don't see how that's going to be, you know, conducive to figuring it out, you know?
Yeah. It would be a bit like trying to build a hard drive, build a computer in front of your dog.
Right.
Maybe looking at it that way. Yeah. You try and look at things in human terms, don't you? You are dealing with something with greater intelligence, has been around billions of years longer than we have.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. Do you think that whatever is visiting us, and I know there's probably many different things visiting us, but do you think that it's possible that some of them are perhaps organic robots, if you will, that were sent out thousands or millions of years ago to do some sort of a mission that even maybe perhaps that civilization isn't even around anymore? You know, I forget, there's a term for it. I don't remember what it, but basically self-replicating. But I wonder if that's a possibility. I suppose it could be.
It would make complete sense. I mean, if you look at the time when it comes to technology from what we had in the 90s to what we have now, that's just a matter of years, and how much that's jumped.
Right.
So then when you put into perspective as a different civilization that's way more advanced, hundreds of thousands, millions of years more advanced than us, then anything is possible.
For sure.
Absolutely anything. So I don't really discount anything. I don't necessarily believe that any civilization out there that are kind of the saviors for us. I don't believe that's the case.
No, I don't think so either. I don't really subscribe to the, I don't know that I subscribe to the ancient alien type theory where we are the progeny of something as well. I'm not quite sure if that, if I subscribe to that either. I think we're animals that these things are looking at and wondering what's going, you know, checking us out for whatever purposes. I have no clue. I can't even begin to guess.
Yeah, I mean, you can glorify a little bit and just say it's like a greenhouse. But yeah, I do know what you're saying. And I think we were just kind of we just kind of are. I don't necessarily believe that we're just a scientific fluke.
No. No, I don't know what's going on. I know there's a lot of interesting theories out there in terms of ancient civilizations also having experiences like we're having today. I think that's quite fascinating, and it certainly makes sense. And you know, a lot of people say, oh, with so many cell phones these days, you know, if there was such a thing as UFOs, you would have irrefutable evidence. Well, it's not that simple.
it's a really funny argument, and you know, I've got a pretty good phone here, and I can go out and I can take a picture of a plane. It doesn't come out. I can barely see it.
No,
the moon looks like a peanut. Exactly. I'd have a big full moon. I've got a sophisticated camera,
and you know what? I'll give you a good example. When I was in my 20s and 30s, I used to drive from Connecticut to Maine every year by myself, which was a beautiful drive, and playing this golf tournament with a bunch of friends I used to play baseball with back in the day. And one year I was heading up there, and I left really early, you know, 3:30, 4 in the morning. And I think it was about 8 in the morning, I was passing through a village in eastern New Hampshire, almost to the Maine border. And all of a sudden I looked to my left. I saw a bear, a big black bear running, with another one chasing it about 50 yards behind it. And these bears were huge. I mean, they had to be close to 400 pounds ish each. The way my car was, I came to a stop in the middle of the road. Thankfully, there was nobody else around really. And the bear ran right in front of my car at an angle. And now the other bear was heading directly towards my car. I had a cell phone with a camera. I was in such wonder and awe of what was happening. It didn't even occur to me to take a picture. You know what I'm saying, though? I mean, when something miraculous or astonishing happens, you're not always like, oh, I gotta get this, you know? You're in wonderment of what's actually occurring in front of you, you know? I know that's hard to believe for some people who are addicted to their phones.
Even though if you've got it in your pocket or in your hand, it's the last thing you think of. I do it all the time. I'm terrible when I go on holiday. When I go on holiday, I barely take pictures. But it should be. My wife's taking about 700 an hour. But, you know, that's but it's just the way it is. And it's this difficult one. And it's a terrible argument when people say that. Well, you know, there's all these great, you know, we've got walking cameras on us constantly, but there isn't any good footage.
Right. Well, here's the other thing. Walk through any city and town in anywhere in Europe or America, and no one is looking up in the sky.
No one. No, I agree with that.
They're all looking at their phones while they're walking.
They do. And it's got worse. It has got worse.
So, I mean, of course people aren't going to be seeing anything. They're practically getting run over by cars.
And I see it all the time. I see it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Every day.
As I'm walking around looking at my phone, I look up and go, look at all these people on their phone. I'm going to send a tweet. I'm going to complain about people doing it.
Right.
Well,
hey Nick, it was really, really great talking to you.
Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing that for our listeners.
You're a great guy. Keep fighting the good fight, and I'll be listening.
Keep in contact, Jeff, all right, and I'll talk to you soon.
Will do, Nick. Thank you.
Take care, brother.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Jeff for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.